Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green, and today we'll be discussing Satan. We're quickly approaching Halloween, so naturally this episode is about the Behooved One. There are so many views of Satan that it doesn't make sense to speak of the Christian view of Satan, though he does also exist in the minds of many Muslims, Jews, and people of other faiths who have very different conceptions of him. But just within the Christian tradition, there have been countless interpretations of Satan over the generations, and present-day believers haven't yet reached a consensus, either about who Satan is or his relationship to humanity. Of course, there will never be a consensus because you can say whatever you want about a fictional person and there's no way to disprove it. So we're going to talk about the most historically popular version of the Christian Satan, the literal one who roams the earth, seeking whom he may devour and lead into temptation. According to Barna, which is sort of the Christian Gallup or Pew, the majority of Christians claim to believe that Satan is not a real person. Even if only 35% of Americans believe in a literal Satan, as Barna suggests, we're still talking about 100 million people in the United States conservatively. And even if you don't believe in the person of Satan, millions of your neighbors do. Something like the Satanic Panic can only happen when people believe in a literal Satan. Families were destroyed, lives were ruined, and innocent people were imprisoned, and all of that would have been cut off at the knees without a belief in a literal Satan or demons. I truly do not understand how Satan is supposed to fit into Christian theology. This is one of those subjects within Christianity where you just want to ask why over and over again. Why does he exist? Why doesn't God just destroy him? Why did God create him in the first place? So, why was Satan created at all? God, in his omniscience, must have known before he created Satan that he would rebel and cause massive human suffering. Why would God make Satan with full knowledge that Satan would turn on him and cause billions of humans to suffer or even go to hell when they otherwise wouldn't have? Also, Satan is blamed often for interfering with God's plan. Why would God undermine his own perfect plan by creating someone who he knew would be constantly screwing it up?
Why? What kind of freak has a big plan, a perfect plan, and then right at the very beginning introduces their own worst enemy into it and lets them f*** it up? Like, what is wrong with you?
God could destroy Satan at any moment he chooses, so why doesn't he? There's no clear reason why God doesn't just end Satan's existence and make his life and everyone else's life much better. Christians will often say that God is planning to, eventually, but that just raises even more questions. If God is able to destroy Satan, and he wants to, then why wait? He's constrained by nothing except his own timeline that he made and is imposing on himself and isn't sharing with anyone else. The reason God doesn't just kill Satan is the same reason Batman doesn't just kill the Joker. Satan, as he exists in the minds of Christians today, seems to often function as an answer to why things aren't perfect. But this ham-handed attempt to answer the problem of evil doesn't work on a few levels. The typical responses to the problem of evil don't work for Satan. Why does Satan need free will? And the soul-making theodicy doesn't apply either, since God isn't trying to develop Satan's character and give him opportunities to grow. Blaming bad things in the world on Satan is just not a very thoughtful response. And additionally, God is omnipotent and Satan is not. On one hand, Christianity explains the universe as a battleground between good and evil, but Christians emphasize how God and Satan are not equal and opposite forces. In the same breath, they say that God is sovereign and that Satan is the ruler of this world, apparently not noticing any inconsistency. They may deny that God and Satan are equal and opposite forces, but they sure act like they are.
Is the devil more powerful than God? Inevitably, they say no. In which case I respond, well, then how can anything the devil wants to do possibly inconvenience or upset any of God's plans? I mean, God is all-powerful. Christians insist that the devil is somehow less, is not all-powerful in the way God is, but yet somehow the devil is still able to inconvenience and thwart God's plans and essentially be a nuisance. You know, this is one of those situations where omnipotence, suddenly the definition changes. Omnipotence trumps non-omnipotence at all times.
The story of Satan, as it was explained to me in church, was that Satan was originally an angel in heaven. He was corrupted somehow and led a rebellion against God, along with other angels, and was banished to hell.
This is a powerful figure. What kind of power does Satan have?
That's a good question. Satan does have power. I mean, if you look at the Old Testament, for example, I mean, we know that he was Lucifer at one point. So he was a brilliant angel, a cherub that led the worship. And it was through pride, obviously, that he fell. So you can see these accounts in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28.
Before we get to those bits of scripture that he mentioned, let's talk about the first time we meet Satan in the Bible, in the Garden of Eden as the serpent. It's never actually stated that Satan is supposed to be the serpent. It's just never said in the book. The snake tempts Eve with the fruit, but it's never actually specified that Satan was the serpent in the garden. We infer a lot about who Satan is and his character by instigating the fall in the Garden of Eden. And yet, it's never stated that Satan is the serpent. We pick up the Bible with all our preconceptions, knowing ahead of time that Satan is the villain of the book, so we read a bad guy in any story as either Satan or a demon. The tradition of Satan being the one to bring death into the world does have textual basis, though. It's just not in the Bible. You can find that idea laid out clearly in something called the Book of Wisdom, which is a book whose canonicity was debated in the 3rd and 4th centuries and ultimately didn't make the cut into our Bibles today. But early Christians had knowledge of this book and likely just connected the dots between the serpent in the Garden of Eden and the story in the now non-canonical Book of Wisdom. So even though this book is not recognized by Christians today, they still have beliefs based on its contents. Isaiah 14 is another frequently referenced chapter where we supposedly learn about the story of Satan. Verses 12 through 13 read, "How you have fallen from heaven, morning star, son of the dawn, you have been cast down to earth, you who once laid low the nations. You said in your heart, I will ascend to the heavens, I will raise my throne above the stars of God." When you read Isaiah 14 in full context, it's clear that the prophet is speaking against the king of Babylon and not Satan. He explicitly names the king of Babylon at the beginning of the prophecy to specify who he's railing against. The same goes for Ezekiel 28, the other passage that was mentioned. It's clear from the context that the author was speaking of someone other than Satan, but Christians try to assert that there's a double meaning here in the passages. This is unfalsifiable and not apparent in the text itself, and we have a more compelling explanation for why these verses are interpreted as applying to Satan. The only place you actually find the narrative of the heavenly rebellion led by Satan is in the Book of Enoch, and other books that are found in a collection called the Pseudepigrapha, which is where you can also find the Book of Wisdom I mentioned earlier, where Satan introduces death into the world. These books are not recognized as canonical by Christians and Jews today, but the Book of Enoch and other pseudepigraphal texts are where the story of the fallen angels originate. The tradition of Satan as a fallen angel, who was punished after leading a rebellion against God, originated with the early Christian authors who were aware of these texts. The early Christian church knew about these books. Plus, facts that are established in the Book of Enoch are referenced in Jude and Revelation, which are canonical, and some of the fallen angels in Enoch are named in Genesis as well. These texts are among the many books that early Christians treated as authoritative, but didn't end up in our Bibles today. The tradition that began in those early days, based on those books, still lives on today. Another great story with Satan is the Book of Job. We learn a few things about Satan, like that he wanders around the earth and can just come up to heaven to talk to God whenever he wants, and apparently Satan finds it pretty easy to push God's buttons. He essentially taunts God and goads him into ruining someone's life, and we shouldn't just mention the Book of Job without acknowledging how insane the story is.
I adore the Book of Job. It's generally perceived or commonly perceived to be this crown jewel of the Bible, right? That mm-hmm. it's this beautiful, poetic, deeply insightful work that gets at the roots of, you know, good and evil, and it's a theodicy, and it's like, why do bad things happen to good people? And of course, none of that's true. The book of Job is absurd. I mean, he's the God of the book of Job. He's a character really worthy of Swift or Voltaire. I mean, they could not have written this guy better, because he's a bully, he's a braggart, he's a lightweight, he's incredibly shallow and mean. The whole thing is just basically a party bet with Satan. Right. You know, why do evil things happen to good people? Well, because God makes a party bet to Satan. That's why. And then, most fascinatingly and hilariously, he has a complete nervous breakdown at the end. Like, somehow the knowledge that he's lost this bet, because he clearly does lose the bet,
right,
makes him flip out, and he just starts talking a bunch of crazy shit in the end about his pet sea monster and unicorns and how lightning talks to him. And, you know, it's just beautiful.
Our conception of Satan today is an amalgam of various disconnected stories from the Bible, like the serpent in Genesis, a couple of Old Testament prophecies that aren't clearly referring to Satan, the crazy book of Job, Satan tempting Jesus, and images of the Antichrist and beasts that appear in Revelation. We also get some important points of Satan's origin story from non-canonical texts that the early Christians knew about. Some of our conceptions of Satan come from art and literature created over the centuries, like Dante's Inferno or Paradise Lost. And our ideas about Satan don't only stem from Christian and Jewish mythology, but also from Greek mythology, as in the case of the god Pan, who bears a striking resemblance to the common image of Satan today, with his horns, goat's legs, and hooves. Satan, like every other part of religion, is man-made and bears the stamp of his lowly origin. I'd like to thank listener and patron Juliana for suggesting this topic, and I'd like to thank everyone who sent me a message or an email. I read all of them and I respond to almost all of them. And thank you to everyone listening. It truly is great to have you. The podcast started just over 2 months ago, and we're at about 600 listeners who listen to the episodes on the day they come out, so that's really cool and unexpected. So thank you. The majority of you haven't connected with me yet on Facebook or Twitter. I have an embarrassingly low number of likes on my page there, so I'll try to make it worth your while if you'd like to get more atheist screeds in your life. It'll help the show as well, as I can get some cool guests in the future once I have a respectable social media that will show that it's worth their time. And since I'm shamelessly asking you for favors, I might as well also ask you if you could leave a review of the show. I also want to thank my patrons for their generous support. I hope the Behooved One rewards you more greatly this Halloween. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, or topic suggestions using the contact info you can find in the show notes. The clips I used today were from The Atheist Experience and from the interview with Chris Matheson and No Illusions on The Scathing Atheist. Links are in the description. Our theme music was written and performed by the band Wailers. The song is called Magic Tricks and was used with permission. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time we meet to counter apologetics.